we are spending so much time chasing after people, trying to get them on the phone, that are actually never interested in selling our house. What if we just didn't spend those time with people and we just spend more time with the people that were worth selling? Same amount of leads, more deals closed.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to the Action Takers, the Action Academy family. I am your host, as always, Brian Lubin, bringing you the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who have already earned their freedom so you can earn freedom in your life and business today. So I'm going to get to the point today. Plain and simple, the guy that is on today is possibly one of the smartest people I've ever met in my entire life. This dude was a millionaire at 20 years old. He had a wholesaling and flipping operation that him and his buddy ran out of a broken down apartment, and they found what scaled and what worked. And now he has created a brand new company that uses artificial intelligence to knock out about 80% of the work that a human would do, which completely eliminates bottlenecks and scale issues. So I think that's about all the intro that our guest today, Mr. Will Brown, needs. The guy is the next Elon Musk. He's here to change the world. And he's popping out. I know multiple friends that have done campaigns with him so far with his new software and his new technology. People are popping out 10x ROIs, 52x ROIs on their wholesaling campaigns. It's ridiculous. And we'll allow you to hear for yourself and make your own judgments. But anyways, if you haven't already, go click the right-hand corner of the screen and subscribe to the show so these episodes go ahead and download for you. And also subscribe to the Action Academy newsletter. It's going to be in the link below. Bunch of free resources there, as well as the show notes and resources for Will as well. And finally, Will is a member of GoBundance with me, so that's where we met 2 years ago. If you are interested in GoBundance, there's a link. You can book a call directly with me to talk about it and the power of mastermind, which we talk about today in the show. So without any further ado, Will Brown. Will Brown, welcome.
Man, it's great to be here. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing fantastic. It's been a long time coming, my friend. I remember, it's crazy. It's been 2 or 3 years since we first met.
Yeah, I think so. I think about 2 years.
At the GoBundance event. And I remember I was 25 at the time. And I was walking around this room full of these guys that are in their mid-30s, 40s, 50s, and I was feeling out of place. I'm like, look at all these successful entrepreneurs and these multimillionaires, seven-figure, eight-figure, nine-figure guys. And then somebody said, I was like, am I the youngest person here? And everyone was like, no, no, man. There's one beneath you. There's one younger, and you need to meet him today. And that was none other than Will freaking Brown that is on the show today. You're 22 now?
22. Yeah, I turned 23 next month.
Okay, so you were 21 when we met.
Yeah, man, it's been wild. And I'll tell you, I'm super grateful to that group because in terms of mentors of all walks of life, family, business, mindset, so many different things. And then also seeing you, your journey and your growth over the last 2 years, I'm like, man, they keep letting him back into these things. But it's because of your resolve and your commitment and how you just show up and add value again and again. So yeah, it's a pleasure to be able to chat with you one-on-one again.
Dude, I appreciate that sincerely, man, because if I could think of a word to describe you, it would be impressive. So I will stop gassing you up at that point here, and I will just let you get into your story, brother. So let's get into you at 16 years old and start us from there and bring us up to where you left off with the Bigger Pockets podcast.
Yeah, I grew up in Northern Virginia. Grew up on a farm. My nearest friend was like a mile away from me. So my parents always had to drive me. And so I had a lot of time on my hands. And caused me to be pretty bored. And school was never really that interesting to me because I would always ask the question, okay, well, why am I learning this? What's the practical value of learning how to do long division in a world where we're going to have calculators? And my teachers, well, everybody doesn't have a calculator in their pocket. This was like, 2006. And I was like, but can't you see where the puck is going? And they said, no, we can't. And so then they hounded me for not wanting to learn great handwriting either. I was like, can't you see where the puck is going? The keyboard is coming out in phones. And bottom line, this was like a bunch of these little events that started to erode my trust as like a 7, 8, 9-year-old in the public education system. And I started to look at the lives that they were living. I was like, wait a second. I didn't have really many points of reference at this time. They're like broke. My teachers are broke. They're miserable. And they're trying to tell me how to make life decisions. Something's off here. What's going on? Bottom line, I didn't find out. I still don't know why. I have some guesses, but I don't know anything for certain. And so I found myself in video games where I could basically create and control these worlds. And I loved especially the economy games because I could learn that if there's many people that want to do a bunch of different things, I could find ways to buy and sell and just create more efficient systems and take a profit and then get nicer stuff, get more stuff. And that was fun to me, that process of doing that. I loved it. And so throughout high school, I was buying and selling sneakers. I was flipping electronics. And then my mom saw that I was into this entrepreneurial stuff. And one of her friends was at like an MLM marketing company, invited her to this millionaire intensive mindset, blah, blah, blah thing. And so I went with her. And then there was a little spiel about someone talking about real estate investing. And this was the first that I ever heard about real estate. Real estate to me seemed like something out there that other people did. It was never in my wheelhouse. Bottom line, my mom and I cough up the $2,000 to go. And we show up and pretty much get brainwashed for 3 days. These guys who's put on these real estate seminars are the best in the business. They make you feel like you don't want to get information from anywhere else, but just them. You want to keep going with them. Until my dad said, no, we're not going to spend $20,000 on the upsell. And that kind of put a sour taste in my mouth. But the seed had been planted nonetheless at that weekend. I had learned that it's possible for everyday people to buy and sell real estate. That's the only neural connection I needed. Once I learned that it was possible, then a couple months later, I started to get into the how, and I started listening to the Bigger Pockets podcast, 1 to 2 of them a day, fascinated by people's stories, not trying to get any money right at the beginning, but just seeking to learn everything I could, because again, the seed had been planted and I wanted to nurture it. It was like an acorn. I felt like it could become something much bigger. So I didn't want to rush the process. I just want to learn everything about the market that I possibly could. And that was my sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school. Then I was starting to take actions. I was starting to put signs in people's yards. I was starting to call people, not producing any results because I still didn't know what I was doing, but I was gaining a general education of the space. And so graduation comes around. I'm applying to colleges and I get accepted to William & Mary in Virginia. My parents are like, congrats, and holding my diploma. I say, I'm going to drop out. They laughed at me. Obviously, they thought I was kidding. But turns out college is exactly what I thought it was going to be and exactly not what I thought it wouldn't be. And got bored with it. And just decided to use my time, just continue to build my real estate investment business, which leads me to the end of the first year where I'm like, do I want to keep renewing? Do I want to keep going? Or do I want to commit 100%? And the environment that I was at when I dropped out of college was sleeping on an air mattress in Norfolk, Virginia, in the ghetto, in the hood. There was like the guy's place we were staying at had a little baby pit bull that woke me up by pissing on me. But honestly, Brian, I was the happiest I had been in years because my life was in my own hands. Even though I only had $30 in my account, it was in my own hands and I was in control of my destiny. So that was like the moment. Most people would be like, hey, I want to stay away from that. But for me, I was so uncomfortable being comfortable in the college, in that system, feeling like a sheep, being herded to the slaughterhouse of getting a job. I've got to speak my mind. Excuse my directness here.
No, go for it.
That something switched in my brain and I was like, I became comfortable actually being uncomfortable. And that was a huge shift in my life and seeing that how can I lean into this discomfort? And I honestly haven't leaned out of it since. I've just taken on bigger and bigger challenges since then. But that's like my origin story of how I got onto this track at such an early age. I was 18 at the time. And it's simply because it's not like I graduated all 4 years of college in a semester. I don't think I'm super smart by those measures in any way. It's just, I saw like, where could I be if I finish school versus if I don't finish school? What if I had these next 3 years to myself? What could I do with it? And that was the exciting question for me.
And then give people, what were your results with this makeshift operation in the hood, in the ghetto, in this crappy little apartment with a pit bull pissing on you? You flipped a house or two, right?
Yeah. So my first deal actually was very awkward because I had a mentor, Bill Caprone. He's in GoBundance, and he was flipping houses, learning from him. And so we felt like we more or less had a deal from just cold calling like probates, that we were just cold calling the list. We weren't producing any quality material. But these people were like, well, we just inherited the property and we don't know what we want to do with it. So we're like, all right, let's get out to the house. And so we bring Phil along with us. And then we stand there nervously, like with our hands behind our back, like wearing polos that we bought the morning of, while Phil actually negotiates the deal and closes on the house and then pays us $5,000. And I remember he gave us like 3,000 of it upfront in cash. And I was like, we're rich. And Brian, we went to the supermarket and we did not even look at the prices. We did not even look for sales. We're just like, we're going to get whatever we want. We're rich. $3,000. Honestly, we go to the bank to like deposit like whatever, $2,800 left. We're like, will they let us deposit this much amount of cash? Are they going to think we're drug dealers or something like that? That was my mindset. But it was that first win that then gave us the motivation. So we moved out of got our own place to use as like a home office, and then started to just refine our systems, partnered with a couple people for marketing, started to double down. Now that we had a data point that this was real, now it's just a matter of doing it again and again, to the point where then I bought the partner out, my original partner, like in like October, November of that same year. We did our first deal in July. And then over the next 6 months, I'm just gung ho. I hire my account, my like first transaction coordinator in October. She starts to pick up a lot of paperwork and I start going to town until every day I'd work 12 hours and my Podio would still have 120 leads that I still had yet to call. And I was like, this sucks. I was doing deals, I was out working, but it wasn't going to scale. And so I said, oh, okay, I need to hire an acquisition manager. So then I hired an acquisition manager. And then both of our plates filled up. And then I hired another acquisition manager. And I got to this point where I was like, okay, things are working. I think I can take this model and I can move it into multiple markets. At that point, we were doing 4 to 6 properties per month, wholesaling them, making about like 14 grand on average per property. So like I was grossing like 100 grand, netting 30K as a 19-year-old 1 year after dropping out of school. I was like, this is absurd. Did I miss something? No, the only thing that I did was I just grinded the heck out of it in a way that would not scale to other markets. I tried to, it didn't work. And so then I started getting curious about why. And I go to this retreat in Cabo, San Lucas, Mexico with M1, which is actually like an old child organizations of GoBundance, actually how I on-ramped into GoBundance. And a couple of us, Phil, some other people and I stay an extra day. We go jet skiing, get a nice dinner, we get in the hot tub. We start having a conversation, and this conversation lasts until 6 a.m. the next morning. And that was the night my life entirely changed, because this realization that you do so much hard work to get a deal across the finish line, but then more or less you have to start over on the next deal, like crippled my motivation to want to take this into 50 different markets. I can't scale exponentially if all of my systems and processes are linear and the way that you play the game is linear. And so I got thinking and I was like, okay, I've already hit my goals. I've already hit my goal of financial freedom. And my goal of what that means to me is not having a big barrel of fish that will keep me fed for the rest of my life sitting off to the side. What that means to me is being able to learn how to fish such that wherever I am, and no matter where in the world, if shit goes south, I can use my core skills. I understand the nature that people will always have problems selling, you know, properties, no matter what market I'm in. I will be able to be good. And because I had that, my nervous system reset and I stopped thinking for me. And I started thinking for the world. I said, okay, what can I do as a human being with this life to elevate the consciousness of humanity? Because, you know, dropping out of college, flipping a couple houses, that seems like a reasonable step. Obviously, there's
natural progression.
I'll figure it out along the way. But that's really the trajectory, the direction I wanted to go, even though I was unclear on the destination. And that transpired. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And so what, you grossed 100 the first year, and then didn't you blow it up even further after that?
Yeah. So I think the first year we did like a total, my goal, this is actually, I rarely remember this. So I appreciate that. My goal was in February of 2018, before I ever did one, $100,000 for the year. And I told my girlfriend at the time I was dating, will you support me? She says, no, that's unfair. You haven't made any money yet. How can you expect me to support you? I said, okay, this is probably not going to, we're probably not going to work out. Bottom line, I remember like walking, I was living in Virginia Beach at the time. I was walking up and down the boardwalk and I was like, wait a second, what did we do this year? And it was 254,000. Even though my goals were set on such figure, when I actually look back at how much we had done, it was 2.5x the impossible goal that I set. The next year, 2019, we did 700,000. And that was with me moving to California in June of 2019 to start this. And I started splitting my time. So really my focus was like 50-50 between the two. And so that's how all that works out. My transitionary, like my life, my memo would basically be called like my memoir, Growing Pains. Because anytime something's working, I break it all down to build the next model. So there's not a whole lot of like consistency or comfort in the processes. Everything is always evolving and changing. And it's something that I just had to learn to stomach and get with and understand that is a symptom of growth. You can't get comfort out of things staying the same way and want to grow at the same time. We mm-hmm. all have the same amount of time in the day. And this just hit me a couple of weeks ago in a new way. Okay, if we all have the same amount of time, what does it really come down to during the day? It's probably not how we spend. Yes, it's how we spend our time, but it's the choices of the people that we make to build whatever building with us. Because if I can hire somebody, for example, I'll use my CTO, and then we'll get into like the tech. If I can hire somebody who already has gone through a 20-year learning curve, not only am I going to be able to be buying that learning curve and that best practice and not have to make mistakes failing forward, but I'm also buying him putting in another 40 plus hours per week. I have doubled my own capacity, but so much more than that. Whereas if I were to try and do everything myself, which we all, when you're first getting started, you're like, I'm the only one that can do that. I actually believe I do things worse than anybody else in the world. And that switching that from I do it the best to I do it the worst has enabled me to simply appreciate, honor, and create space to bring on super talented people that can actually knock it out of the park. Because my standards for other people are extremely high because, again, I have the belief that if I do it, I'm going to suck at it. And so the one thing that I'm good at is understanding and putting the people in place on the team. And that's something that has to be earned and fought for and learned through trial and error. I've hired people, I fire people, but breaking through that mold. And now we're like bringing on a couple new people every single month. I can't wait to hire the next person. I love seeing the huge paychecks going out the door because I know that's coming back to me so many times over than if I were to even try and learn what it takes. So that's like a quick aside to huge benefit.
And it's been cool. It's been really cool watching you make that transition. Right. Because before you were the guy that was on the podcast, made like 700,000, almost seven figures at what, like 19, 20 years old, doing all this flipping and wholesaling. And to go from that and to have all these realizations and have the conversation about changing it from a me sport to a we sport that soon, that is a shining endorsement for the power of, like, truly for the power of mastermind and mentorship, right? Because you saw it in GoBundance and you saw it with the people that were looking at it. And I know that they preach it from the mountaintops and you are able to implement, because what you and I have, that somebody that's 50, 60, 70, that may be worth hundreds of millions of dollars, we have time. And so now it's an exponential return game. It's a massively infinite return because we have such a large time horizon. I want to tell a story real quick before we get into the rest of your trajectory here, because now you're doing some really cool things in the AI game and you're taking all the principles that you have already and then you're going to scale them again exponentially. You and I, when I met Will, we were golfing.
Jeez, this isn't going to go well.
Yes, it is. We were golfing and this is such a rare skill. So you're one of the smartest people. I think you're probably the smartest person I've ever met. I'm not exaggerating. I don't know if you realize how smart you are. I think you halfway do, but you're genuinely one of the smartest people I've ever met. And it's really cool. Here's a skill you have that I noticed, and it's in the story of golf. we all pull up to golf, and it's me and a couple other guys and Phil that Will just talked about. And then Will, we all pull up, and there's a bunch of other guys worth $100 million, David Osborne, all those guys. So it's this big deal to golf. And I'm pumped, and this is my first time going to Go Abundance. And then Will pulls up, and he's like, all right, guys, I've never swung a golf club. Let's do this. And we all click and look at each other. And I was like, well, he's punking us. He knows how to golf. He's just going to all of a sudden start golfing. This man had never swung a golf club and had his polo on, rental bags, and he was on the course. And he's like, all right, cool. Teach me how to swing on the course.
Yeah.
So that's a skill. You have a knack for diving headfirst into action. You are the personification of ready, fire, aim. So was that something, is that just how you're wired, or was this something that was learned for you? Because this is such a hang up for most people getting into paralysis analysis, but not for you.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about like the relationship between naivete and fear, right? Ignorance and fear. And an analogy of this is, what if I go out into the ocean, there's one way I could go about it, which is frolicking in the water, in the waves, and playing around and being ignorant that, who knows, I might step on something, or there might be a shark, or there might be something sharp, or who knows. The other way is to be fearful of every single step. And at the end of the day, I always look at like the actual cost. Is it going to be an emotional cost? Are people going to make fun of me? That doesn't really matter to me. People making fun of me, I make more fun of myself than anybody can make fun of me. And so I think there's actually a correlation between going from real estate investment to saying, hey, I can start an AI company, to learning golf.
And it's all the same.
Yeah. And here's why. It's like, okay, there's people around me that know how to do it. They're human beings. I'm a human being. I'm sure there's a lot of steps in the process here. But I also have always believed that iteration is the best tool that you have. Rather than trying to take this perfect swing of the baseball bat, how can I structure it such that I can set myself up in an environment to do 100 swings and improve 1% each time? And that's really the approach that I take to anything that I do now. And so I know, I call it the bleeding phase. It's like when you first start flossing and your gums are bleeding, it's like painful building that habit. But once you get used to it, your body is adaptive. The mind builds muscle memory. I just started picking up like the piano, and it's fascinating to see to me how manually I have to do the thing with my fingers, and then naturally I can just do it with my eyes closed. And I think those principles of understanding the superpower that exists inside of our own mind and leveraging the intelligence of others has put me in a position and was like, what's not possible? The only things that aren't possible are things that break the laws of physics. And still, those are only laws of physics as we know them today. And so I took my arrow and I aimed a pretty high trajectory and said, look, I don't know exactly how to build an AI, but I do know that I've had thousands of conversations with sellers, and I could train another human being to do that. And I heard rumors that there was technology in chatbots. And I said, okay, even if it was a super complex, very fundamental decision tree, I could build that out. I could probably learn to code that myself. And so starting with that, of like more the why not, rather than the how will I ever be able to, is just the mindset that is the perfect foundation to launch from. Because you're not expecting to see anything, but you understand it's just going to be a matter of iteration. And that's probably why I'm drawn to AI itself.
Yeah.
Probably, go ahead.
Absolutely, man. And like I said, it's the perfect personification because you're a standard operating procedure in and of yourself. Because I remember when you were doing it, I'm a decent golfer and I was getting pissed off while we were golfing. Phil's a decent golfer. He snapped his 9-iron over his knee.
I remember that.
And then we're all golfers. We know how to do it. And Will's just smiling the entire time. He's like, oh, this is fun, guys. This is fun. And I'm like, this guy gets it. And that's such a rare skill. And now we're able to transfer that. And I think that's just a really good summary. I think that is your MO. Like that's your operating system that allows you to pivot and succeed in everything you do. You just really, truly fall in love with the process and the iteration. So it's been really cool to watch. And I know that fast forward 20 years, I can't wait to visit whatever country you own. It's going to be
It's hilarious. No, all the countries already claim that would be a human rights violation. I'd build robots to make the cost of living negative, to have actually people get paid just to live there and do nothing. But yeah, I think there's other worlds. So Titan, right? Titan, Saturn's largest moon. That was my original North Star goal. That's also what I named my company Titan X after. It stands for Titan Experiences, the world's smoothest customer experience. And I think another rocket like booster for me to this mission was the amount of pain and like emotional suffering that I felt when I had to wait on hold of people on customer service. And I just had the experience that my time was being completely disrespected. And I was trying to set up utilities at a property and I was being treated like shit. I was like, wait a second, how are we talking about putting people on Mars, but we're still having people wait on hold and having them go through these terrible phone trees? What's the disconnect here? And so bottom line, started to like actually understand the core technologies, the existing systems, all the Siris and Alexas, why they're not going to solve that problem, and what it's really going to take to be able to solve that problem. And I was like, if I do nothing else with my life, if I solve customer service, I feel like I will have done my part. I will have fulfilled on my potential, and the world will be a better place if people do not need to. Imagine if, like, when you talk to a company, that was the highlight of your day. What if that was the place to feel heard and not hurted? What if that was the place where you could be valued and actually supported along your journey in life, which is the mission of these companies? It just doesn't translate through 17 layers of call centers, managers, and minimum wage people at a 40% turnover a year. So the system's broken. Horses and carriages don't scale. We needed something a little bit more automatic. And so I got into digging into the tech, and we started to come up with a thesis about how to build this technology, about how to teach something that could have really good conversations. And to get into it, like just a little bit, the way self-driving works is it looks at a lot of data and then it's drawing patterns between the computer vision. It's being able to recognize object, and then it's following logic based on the object, which is the same thing that we do as human beings, by the way. We go through the world, we recognize objects, and then we go in and say, okay, we want to eat food. We need to get this. We need to get this. We need to get this. We want to walk somewhere. We get depth perception, all of this. And it's so seamless, we don't even realize we're doing it. It just seems like this is our reality, but it's very much patched together through all our senses. AI doesn't have that senses, though. It has to be constructed from the ground up. And so to go back, I was like, there's no great store of conversational data on the internet. There's just not. There's Reddit, but Reddit's not a good store. And anybody who's tried to build a bot like that has always become very quickly racist, misogynistic, and they just shut it down. You can Google it. It's hilarious. And so I realized the solution. Yeah, really, that's the reality
first,
of it.
First world problems, yeah.
Google racist chatbot Microsoft. You'll get a kick out of it. Right. Sorry, Microsoft. They know what they've done. Bottom line, though, it's not the engineer's fault. It's just how it's been constructed. And so I don't come from a computer science background. I don't come from a coding background. I come from a talking to people to get sales done background. I come from a building rapport, gathering information, answering questions, handling objections. I said, well, wait a second. Isn't that what a conversation is? There's two parties. There's maybe one person has one goal and the other person has the other goal. And then it's a negotiation to be able to have both of their goals met. Isn't that more or less what a conversation is? And that there's some steps along the way and there's some questions and there's some different ways you have to handle things. Okay. What if we were to build something in cases where there's a lot of the same conversation happening? We would be able to improve and get exponentially smarter with each conversation until the point where we have mastered that specific type of conversation at such a low cost per conversation, because it's just ones and zeros and electricity flowing through the wires, that it will no longer make sense for human beings to hire human beings in that position. And so where we are starting to bring it nearly full circle is in the real estate investment space. The problem that I hit a wall when I was trying to scale was that I faced this diminishing marginal return with every single dollar I spent on marketing. And here's why. We only have so much time in the day. And I had a team of 3 acquisition managers. And when 10 leads come in every day, which costs you $2,000 to generate those leads, and all they say is name, number, and address, how do you know which ones are worth following up with first? How would you figure it out?
A ranking system, yeah.
Perfect. But how would you rank them?
Exactly. You wouldn't be able to. That's what it's lacking, is being able to have any differentiators or ranking.
Yeah. So the acquisition manager has to call 4 to 5 to 6 times to get them back on the phone, even if they just responded. People are notoriously difficult to get a hold of these days. And they have spam blockers and block your call if you're not in the favorite. So that's going to continue to get worse. And I said, oh my gosh, this is awful. We are spending so much time chasing after people, trying to get them on the phone that are actually never interested in selling our house. What if we just didn't spend those time with people and we just spend more time with the people that were worth selling? Same amount of leads, more deals closed because who's actually worth following up with? And this isn't just in real estate. This applies to all industries.
Sales in general.
Yeah, sales. And so here's the issue. A lot of real estate investors will drive traffic to a website. And so they'll say, hey, put in your address, your phone number, and your name to and your like email or whatever to get a offer. You click get an offer, and then it takes you to a second page where it says, now tell us more about your property. They're like, no, I just clicked a button to get my offer. Where's my offer? And they drop off. And so it's creating all these leads where basically you can't have a huge form for people to fill out because they're just not going to fill it out. They're going to go to the next person. And the other thing is a form is a one-sided conversation that does not provide the person filling out that form any immediate value. Think of like a support ticket. If you fill out a form because you're using some service and you fill out, hey, I need help with this, you're not getting immediate value for putting the energy and time into doing that. You're getting perceived future value that they're going to get back to you and resolve the problem. Put yourself in the shoes of a motivated seller. Same exact thing happens. And if we're looking at that versus 17 other options, it was an unwinnable game. And so we sort of had to flip the script and said, okay, well, what would happen if we had a conversation with people as soon as they responded, like we instantly replied to them? What would it take to do that? And then what if we were to have a conversation that qualified them on the motivation, their timeline, their condition and price, where in a way that they actually answered the questions because we were also giving them value in that conversation? No,
there's an exchange. Yeah. And there's an exchange. Yeah,
exactly. So they're willing, right? There's not an entitlement. There's like, hey, we'll give you this. You give us that. And what I found through my experience is that what is valuable to sellers is information, is getting their questions answered, is learning more about the process. Because most people that reach out in the cash offer motivated seller world, there's some level of uncertainty in their life that they're starting to understand. Maybe that's an upcoming inheritance or a tenant that's causing problems or whatever. And they're trying to reach out and figure out what their options are before that uncertainty turns to certainty. Most people don't get that. Most people think people will only respond when their house is on fire and they need somebody to buy it. But how I did over $1 million in that first year and a half was that I focused on the follow-up. 80% of my deals came from follow-up. And that's because on our initial calls, 80%, yes, 80 of them. Most people do not follow up. And so they're completely missing out on everyone who's a legitimate seller, but that is not going to, that's only ready in a couple months, but they're still super motivated. And so they go for the low hanging fruit that everyone else is going for. But the people that build the relationships over time, when that person 3 months later is actually ready to sell, who are they going to go to?
It's going to go to the person that, yeah, that either the one that they have the relationship with or the one that they most recently have spoken with.
Exactly. Here's why investors don't do that. Because it's a capacity problem. You can only follow up with so many people. And again, going back to that, they're not ranked. They're not prioritized. They have no idea if John, Sally, or Sue is going to be the one we're following up with. They put them on these preset automatic drip campaigns that are so general, they don't work. And they just notify you of a response. And so your conversions go down. The rapport, the trust in that relationship goes down. So what's the solution? What we have now tested out in over 25 markets is using a traffic generator of direct mail. And I'll speak to that here in a second as to why we're using direct mail. But we have found the best converting piece of mailer, which is called auto pen letters. And we have partnered. It's a machine that actually holds a pen and hand writes it. So it's not a handwritten font. It's an actual handwritten letter. I think I've got one like here. And it actually looks, it's a pen that's written on paper and it's got a note inside. And we say, text your address to this phone number to get an offer after a couple of lines and really smart copy that we've A/B tested. When sellers text their address to that phone number, they're engaging with our AI that's responding not in 30 minutes or 6 hours, but in 3 seconds. to then come back, validate their address using a Google Maps API to make sure that we know exactly what they're talking about. And then we go through and say, great, what's your name? What's your motivation, timeline, condition, price? The average conversation length is 3 minutes. People don't just stop halfway through the conversation because it's engaging. It's natural. It's the way that we talk to each other. If you're having a conversation with me and we're texting back and forth, and you're seeing that I'm texting, say 5 to 7 seconds later, you're going to stay engaged in that conversation because you want to see what I have to say. And the reason you want to see what I have to say is because the contextual frame has been set up properly. Let's say if you're a potential seller, a lot of people are doing cold texting, and it's depending on the state and how you feel about it, could be a potential TCPA violation. But if I'm texting you saying, hey, do you want an offer? You didn't ask to get that text. You're already put on the defensive and you already have the power in the conversation. You have the leverage. You're not going to want to give me truthful answers. I came to you. We flip that script with mail because when people are coming in through mail, they're inbound people. They're already motivated. They're playing along, if you will. And what we're seeing is an uptick in conversion rates when you give people the option to text their offer, text their address for an offer, rather than just calling a number. Number one, because they actually see that they're going to be able to respond on their time and choose the way that they want to self-express. But number two, I guarantee you, if you Google sell my house fast, your city, and you call 10 different investors, like I guarantee half of them won't even answer the phone. It's a capacity issue. It's a connection issue. Someone's not always there available to pick up the phone. And the best investors I've ever met don't want to hire or run an entire call center of virtual assistants because that's going to hurt their conversion rates as well because they can't control the quality of the conversation. And so what they want to do is just buy more houses. And so what we have built is a system that allows you to set up create a marketing number, your local area code, create a campaign, roll out a mail campaign that uses custom copy that we've already predetermined. We handle all of it. And then when those responses come in, not only are we qualifying them and then passing them off to you, you're also getting a lead report, an SMS notification of a summary of the conversation, motivation, timeline, condition, price, and a link to view the transcript 3 seconds after that conversation was done. And then for the entire campaign, you can go back and see your KPIs of how many responses you got per day, how many calls you got, because sometimes people will still call about 20%. How many leads you got, how many prospects came through that weren't fully qualified, and you will be able to see your cost per lead. And now we're adding to your revenue per lead per campaign, all the KPIs we manage just by putting in a couple pieces of information about what mail, like how much mail that you sent out. And if I know anything about real estate investors, it's that even the guys who are doing consistent volume have no idea what their KPIs are, and they're really just guessing and relying on luck that something's going to close. And what that causes is like seemingly high highs, but then very low lows where they could be looking at a pipeline of the next 60 days of not having any more deals coming in because they simply have just been doing sporadic marketing here and there. Whereas investors that know that are in it for the long haul and want to consistently acquire off-market properties each month understand that you have to plant the seeds now to plant in the spring to harvest in the fall. On real estate, it's a slightly smaller time scale, but you have to be consistently planting seeds. It's just a lot to keep track of. And so in addition to these conversational skills and the qualification, we embedded all that so people can see the performance of the technology and they can see exactly down to the cent what they're spending and what they're getting out of every single campaign.
I've got, first off, wow. Second off, It just really never stops. Like how you phrase things and how you view things and how you solve problems never stops being, like I said, I alluded to it before, but impressive is the word. An observation I have of a problem that you solved, whether it be intentional or not, I would probably err on the side knowing you that it was intentional, but you went into this trying to solve a customer service issue and a scale issue and an efficiency issue. But then a problem that you also seem to have solved is a generational communication gap issue. Because now when you're looking at the people that are sellers in this market, the people that we're prospecting for, they're looking at maybe what? I'm sure you have data on this, probably like 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s years old.
Yeah, because you even have the boomers who are a little bit older, but they're usually like being advised by one of their kids. So
the grown kids. So what you're doing is the problem with the regular text and the website and everything is because they're not necessarily going to want to be engaging with that platform and with that communication. And the people that you're reaching for are the ones that did start and come up sending letters, receiving letters. And now they've got so many automated letters that none of us look at the letter unless it's handwritten. Honestly, I throw away mail all the time. The only mail that catches my eye is something that's handwritten because I'm like, it's either a wedding invitation or someone I know personally. So you cracked that code. And then what you did was you married the new generation with the old because now they're opening this letter, which is their introduction to you in the way that they're familiar with and were brought up in. And now you're saying, hey, this is something familiar to you. This is a medium familiar to you for communication. Now, let me bring you and invite you to come into my world and text this. And so now you've got people, because I've ran text campaigns and done all of that too. And people get pissed off because they're like, I don't want to text nobody. And they'll call you, like you said, 20%. But now this is such a cool invitation to be able to have both forms and both styles of communication married. And I think that's such a sweet spot that you're hitting, because that's very interesting that this AI company is based off of the backbone of direct physical mail.
Yeah.
It's a juicy irony.
It really is. And I was like, oh man, mail is not sexy. All right, let's make mail sexy again. And here's how you do it. You find the highest converting piece. And then because I'm a prop tech investor platform company, I'm not just one investor sending out a couple thousand pieces of mail a month. I got dozens of customers. We're shooting for about 1,000 by the end of the year. That's a lot of leverage for me to go to the mail houses and said, hey guys, let's work out a deal. And let's work out a deal such that we create a bulk discounted price for anybody who uses my platform, no matter how much they want to send. And so not only is it everything that you said, but you're getting the same pieces in conjunction with our like instant qualification response at a 50% discount than what your competitors are being able to pay for the same pieces. And so in that way, it's like a no-brainer. You don't even have to use the technology. Well, we make it because I'm not just trying to ruin the mail industry and give everybody a discount. But for these specific mail partnerships, a 50% haircut means that if you were to spend $3,000 before, you might have been able to send out maybe 1,800, 2,000 mailers. But now you can send out 3,000 mailers. And so you're getting an additional 10 leads. You're going to be doing more deals on the same initial dollar output than your competitors are, which means you're going to be able to out-market them. And the reason that we did that is because all of our customers, when we're onboarding people, we start them with a trust-building campaign because it's important for me that people see this disruptive technology prove results for them in their business. So we usually do 3,000 mailers, one touch, one campaign. But I want everyone to come back and scale, because that's what our technology enables them to do, is to scale the amount of mail they're sending out to be able to get more leads inbound. We qualify those leads, and now they have more actual opportunities, and they're spending their time with the people that are actually on those opportunities. We're building intelligent and dynamic follow-up sequences to go and respond, reply to people, and continue to build that relationship. For the investor to never even know that a lead came in, they can see in their KPIs, but that person will only come onto the desk once they've bubbled up to the top. And we've said, hey, okay, now this person's motivated. A couple months ago, they weren't. Here's what's happened. Here's our conversations that we've had so far. And now here's where they're at. And to be able to hire that at the click of a button would seem too good to be true. But I can tell you there's 2.5 years of diligent work going through every single layer and understanding how these conversations work and the variations of what people say to be able to construct the tooling that we need on the back end that we now have to be able to build all these things out and continue to refine them as we're scaling across the country.
Man, okay, I love this. I really wanted to take you into the hiring process and how you went about that. But just for simply time's sake, because I want to be able to condense this less than an hour, I want to invite you to share some of your case study data. that you've had from some of these trial runs, and then go into how many more people you're taking on as customers right now, because I already know that after this airs, you're going to be flooded. So let's go ahead and establish what kind of ROIs you're seeing here with your campaigns, and then how many more we're taking on, and then what this looks like moving forward.
Yeah, totally. Which is a great point, because one of the things that we're being cautionary about is limiting the amount of people, because if everybody's using this sort of supercharged system, it's going to hurt the people who came on earlier. So we're going to be limiting on some sort of population cap for sure. Like most of the real estate investor companies that are doing that are doing something proprietary, because otherwise it will just become a commodity and become less valuable. And that's not my intention here. That's not what I want to do.
Sure.
One thing to note here is that geography has a huge impact in terms of the ROI. And why that is just because of competition. If somebody is getting 20 mailers per week versus 2 mailers per week, the chance that they're going to respond to yours is obviously much lower if they're getting the 20.
Sure.
That is just simple math. And so the nice thing about that, though, is if you're wholesaling in those urban metropolitan markets like Philly, Memphis, pretty much all of Florida, Dallas, Houston, there's so many places, Chicago, Seattle, Los Angeles, guys, places like that, you are going to have a ton of buyers for deals. It's going to be much harder to find inventory. So your cost per lead is going to be higher. So getting the first one, we have Philadelphia, a guy named Kelsey, and he's done a couple different touches with us. And in aggregate, this campaign was 5,600 mailers. So the total campaign cost was about $7,900. We generated 49 leads for him, and he was just wholesaling them. And he did 3 deals to get to $61,000 in total revenue on that $7,000 spend, which is about like a 7.6x campaign ROI and a $161 cost per lead. So this is a lot of numbers, but I could probably simplify it. But these are all super important KPIs to see what's working, what's not working. And we provide this as well, because some investors will think that they actually have a lead volume problem, when in fact they actually have a lead conversion problem, and they're not spending the time with the types of leads that they should be, when they don't actually need to generate any more leads until they have their closing and negotiating appointment setting process down. So that's why we track it all at each stage.
Sure. I know that you probably intentionally didn't want to share it because it's such, hopefully it's not an outlier, but share Hayden's data.
Yeah.
I brought him into GoBundance, and he was very hesitant to join GoBundance. Hayden, if you're listening to this, shout out. He said, I don't know about GoBundance, and he joined. And I said, hey, man, that 10 grand is going to come back to you real quick, just one relationship away. And Will paid for a couple of years of GoBundance for him. So what was Hayden's ROI?
Yeah, so this is hilarious because I want to see if this can be reproduced. So Hayden, I get on a call with him. I say, all right, let's do 3 touches, 1,500. He's in like rural Tennessee. And so 3 touches of 1,500, each one of them costs about $2,400. Total expenses, $7,000 all in. He drops it. He says, okay, let's do this. We ship him the boxes of mail. He drops like the first couple boxes from the first round. We ship him all 3 touches. On this first touch, he gets 17 leads from 1,500 response, which is over like a 1% response rate, which is insane. I was like, okay, that's good. But I remember I'm coming back from a trip and I'm going through customs. And I'm texting him saying, hey, how's it going? Hey, have you dropped your next round of mail yet? He's like, dude, I've got 4 of these guys under contract. 9 of the leads were really solid and I'm super swamped. I'm going to have to hold off on sending more mail. I was like, wait a second, what? You put 4 under contract out of 9 deals, and now he's flipping, right? So he's in a more rural market, but his metrics are $2,400 spend. His total flip revenue is $128,000. His gross profit on the flips, that's a 52x campaign ROI. He hasn't even sent out touches 2 or 3. He's going to be able to like triple that. But for me, it's a little annoying. Man, this is great. However, I'm only charging $20 per lead that we qualify. So I know he'll be a repeat customer for life with us, but it was still hilarious. See, oh my gosh, you did 4 contracts, closed 3 deals that you make $40,000 per deal, and your cost per deal was $800 all in. That's insane. So he's doing something right.
So moving forward, if people are interested, which every person listening to this, if they're involved in real estate, which is a majority, if they're interested and they want to reach out, What does this look like? How many more are you taking on? What does this process look like if getting in touch with you?
Yeah. So the best way is just to go and book a discovery call just to see if it's a fit with how you're generating traffic and to go through a short conversation and say, hey, does it make sense for us to have a second conversation? It's definitely not a fit for everyone. It's not a one size fits all approach. There is a specific sort of like criteria and parameters that would make it make more sense than have it make less sense. Like, for example, if you're just trying to get into buying houses for the first time, some of it might be new, but if you're a veteran and you've been doing this for a while and you run by the KPIs, it should make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Go to our site, titanx.ai, and there should be a link there to go start your free trial and book a discovery call. And the discovery call is actually with Sean. And I hired Sean because a couple of GoBros recommended me because he just came out of the Emerge program. And so his goal is to get into GoAbundance by the end of the year as well.
Yep. I saw him.
So yeah, go show him some love. And the one promo that we're doing in terms of capping it is, I got the objection from people, well, Will, if what you say is true, the technology is going to keep getting better. So why should I jump on this now rather than in a couple months and a couple months and a couple months? And so what we created was an early adopter lifetime discount. Whereas if you sign up before May 30th of this month, so it's like May 12th right now, you will basically have a tag on your account that says you get a 30% discount on all the future stuff. Because we're going to be coming out with features to automatically go back and forth and negotiate with sellers to follow up with them and to set appointments with them as well that you'd be able to turn on and off. And you can bet your bottom dollar we're going to be charging more on a per lead qualified for those features. So the incentive is to sign up now before May 30th and I'll lock in that early adopter for you, tag that to your account so you have that forever.
Yeah. And what we'll do is we'll, like, I've known you 2 years. We'll go ahead and we'll expedite this. So this will be out. I'll try to get this out next week so people will have enough of a window. And
cool.
GoAbundance, guys, that's out of respect for y'all. You're throwing you a bone. We're getting y'all that early adopter discount because I can already know, yeah, this is going to be huge. Any other disqualifications? Who is this not for? Let's go ahead and say all the reasons why you shouldn't use this. So that way people that are reaching out, like, they know that this is for them. So we can go ahead and get that out of the way as much as possible.
Yeah, this is not for people whose like exit strategy can't substantiate on their deals, can't substantiate like between a $1,000 and a $4,000 cost per deal in terms of the mail. There's a lot of investors, a lot of people who are doing text message marketing, and it's like super cheap. It's like a couple $100 a month to use that service. And so they're generating a ton of leads that they've been sift through. This isn't for outbound. This, you can't just give me a list. You can't text people without their consent. This is really for people who want to buy back their time or increase the dollar per hour productivity of their existing acquisitions people by allowing us to be able to prioritize those leads for them and to generate a predictable source of new leads inbound, managing through the KPIs. So if you're doing like one every couple months, it probably won't make a lot of sense to probably for people doing like at least, you know, one to two a month. And then the more that you're doing per month, the more it's a fit because the more leads you're having to sort through and qualify to see which ones are worthwhile.
Okay, awesome. And then, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, which I know you still are, because I don't think that many of y'all would exit this interview randomly. And I know that you're all going to finish this because you're all tried and true real estate professionals or investors that are looking into getting into real estate. If you go and subscribe to the Action Academy newsletter, we will also have Will out on Tuesday, and we can include some of these case studies within the newsletter so that you can be able to see on your eyeballs. You can have a recap of our conversation today, some of the top tips, takeaways from this episode, as well as more information on Titan X. So, Will, brother, what, for the closing question, because for time's sake, for the closing question, if you could end and leave this world at the end of your life, what is the one thing that you'd want to leave as your legacy?
So it's my mission of the company, and it took me 2.5 years to put this into one sentence. So it's pretty packed. I would want to leave an elevated consciousness through my efforts and my team's efforts to democratize access to personalized superintelligence. I would want to leave every human being on Earth with the power to tap into AI and have it help them understand the map of their mind and to read that and to see how we create our own reality and to see exactly how they got to where they want to go and that it's possible for them to go wherever they want and to be assisted at every step along the way without feeling lost, without feeling like they need to figure out everything for the first time for our species. So democratized access to personalized superintelligence.
There we go. I knew you'd had put a lot of thought into that answer. So I needed to ask you that before we left. So anywhere else people can find you that you want to direct people towards or just TitanX.ai?
I'm starting to post more real estate content now that we've launched on my Instagram too. I also post fire spinning content for laughs. It's one of my hobbies. And that's Instagram, will.jbrown. Shoot me a follow there. Shoot me a DM. We'll say, hey, what's up? It's me that manages it. And then also on Facebook too, if you're in GoButtons, just reach out, holler, or come through on our site. Of the best way, I'd love to be able to have a relationship where I'm, you know, providing value for people. And for a long time, I racked my heads of how can I do that? I don't want to coach. I don't want to tell people things they already know. I don't want to motivate them. I want to create something that could actually be valuable to them in their day to day. And let's do it.
Yeah. And in closing, I remember that when we were finishing that same conference, this is the first conference that I tell in my stories about the first conference I ever attended in GoBundance. And I remember leaving and I asked Will in passing, I said, hey man, I was like, is there any other advice, any information that you could give on doing all these things that you're doing? And he said, yeah, check out this podcast and this podcast. And I was like, you know what? Like, podcasting seems to be a very evergreen way of presenting and preserving information. And now here we are, full circle.
Amazing. I appreciate you. Full circle.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you very much for coming on. This has been Brian and Will Brown, signing off with the Action Academy Podcast.
You've been listening to the Action Academy Podcast, helping you to choose what you want with who you want. When you want.
You've been given the gift of freedom. Don't turn your back on that.
We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some practical and useful information. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on social media. Remember, financial independence is freedom.
The flags of freedom fly. Freedom fly.